We're all looking for ways to save, especially on medical bills. But where do you start? Unless you're a medical billing expert, finding savings can seem impossible. HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your insurance and flags errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. Saving starts with knowing where to look. Visit HealthLock.com today before you see another healthcare provider.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, ah, yeah. Love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Tenor girl go shopping.
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey there, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks at the future and says, everything is awesome. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Volkbaum.
And I'm Joe McCormick. And today you are going to be hearing a very special
command performance
treat from us. It will be our second attempt at this podcast because the first one
was eaten,
was, well, recorded and vanished mysteriously under dubious circumstances. We think it was stolen by the Russians.
I always suspect the Russians. I think it's a good bad guy, the Russians. which is actually really appropriate, because today we are talking about movies.
Yeah,
we're going to talk about specifically big data and the movies, both with the Oscars, which here in the United States, they were just recently, that award ceremony was just recently held, and also just with movies in general, and how big data is shaping the movies, or at least...
Or may misshape.
The movies, as the case may be.
Mm-hmm. As I said last time when we recorded this, Oscar season is a time when you're going to hear me getting on my high horse and just allow me to please. Man, I can't stand award ceremonies. Something about the whole enterprise of it just seems so wrong and stupid to me. Like, you're going to put these movies next to each other and say, which one was better?
Yeah.
What was better? Selma or the Grand Budapest Hotel? And I'm like, why are you comparing them? Like, what would even cause you to do that?
And I think some things you can, like, in the grand scheme of things, if you were to take all movies, sure, there are movies we can point to and say, these are really good movies. And there are movies we can point to and say, these are really bad movies. But when you get to the point where you're talking about contenders for something like the Oscars, presumably, all of these films are representative of excellence in some manner. And once you get to that point, it's really a matter of subjectivity, which one is, quote unquote, the best picture, right?
But the honor is in being nominated.
it really kind of is, in a way, because, I mean, how do you judge a killer comedy, like something that genuinely makes you laugh and you have a great time and you truly enjoy it and everything's like done well.
Very serious historical drama about something tragic.
Or just a heartwarming story that tugs at your heartstrings. I mean, if any of these things, if they're really effective at what they're supposed to do, then they are great movies, right? So how can you tell which one is better than the other? But that's all kind of beside the point.
And also, I need to point out that what's really important in art is winning.
You know, it's funny that we're pointing out that the problem here is the subjectivity that comes into evaluating things like movies. But the fact that there's subjectivity doesn't mean you can't get nasty and just quantify it by brute force.
Well,
and that brings us back to our topic.
Yeah.
Big data and the movies.
It's actually kind of crazy because you do think, like, when you think of something like art, you think of that as being a very human endeavor, right? Something that is not necessarily quantifiable, something that has an element that goes beyond what we can achieve with an artificial construct, that an artificial machine of some sort could not create or appreciate art the way we can. And therefore, you wouldn't expect to be able to use these machines to evaluate that art and then come up with a good guess as to which one deserves an award. However, you'd be wrong. This is the weird thing.
Okay.
But then, like, in a way, it's more about figuring out how people think rather than the quality of the art itself. That's, I think, a distinction we have to make. So we're really talking here in this specific part about big data and the movies and how big data can help a sophisticated system predict which movies are most likely to win awards.
Okay, so what do we mean when we say big data?
Well, so we generate a lot of information every single day, right? About everything. We generate it, we analyze it, we come up with new figures based upon the analysis of the old figures. That joins the data.
Mm-hmm. Because everything that we do online is in some way quantifiable, even if no one is tracking it. Probably someone's tracking it.
Yeah. It's probably being recorded somewhere. Whether it's being anything useful or otherwise is being done with it that's another question.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. So we get these mountains of data, and if you figure out a good way to analyze that data, you might be able to make something meaningful from it. Now, some of that data is already categorized in some way, which makes it a little easier to analyze. Some of it is, you know, quote unquote, loose data that doesn't have any categorization or any other meta-analysis attached to it. So it's still valuable, but it's harder to incorporate into a system or an algorithm. But there are a lot of companies that are rising up around the challenge of analyzing big data for the benefit of other entities. So, for example, market analysis, huge with big data,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a company and you're looking to launch a product, you might end up consulting a big data analysis company to find out things like what sort of aesthetic approach you need to take with your product, what sort of advertising strategy should you incorporate. Lots of different bits and pieces that would go into the determination of how you would go forward to give yourself the best chance of success.
Yeah, or if you just want to place bets on the Oscar winners and make some money off of your friends, there's companies for that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm not encouraging gambling. Well, I guess what I said was just encouraging gambling. But
let's say, for example, I've got a friend who throws an Oscar party every year.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things she does is she hands out ballots to people.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
And you go and you pick your choices for who's going to win what. And then the person who has the most correct answers wins whatever the prize happens to be. And usually it's one of those things
T-shirt
where you
that says most soulless hack.
Usually.
Wow. I'd wear that T-shirt. That sounds like a great T-shirt. Can
this
we make
unbiased
that
opinion
guys?
Brought to you by. So, no, it's usually in our case, it's usually like you throw $2 into the betting pool
yeah.
And then whoever gets it wins the kitty or whatever. So, yeah, it's kind of a fun little exercise, although I didn't participate this year. I had threatened that I was going to take the information from one of these companies and put it to use. So we wanted to talk a little bit about the ways that big data has or that marketing firms have used big data to try and do things like predict Oscar winners. Now, keep in mind, this was not for business purposes, right? It wasn't. Or not directly for business purposes. It's not like there are companies that are in business of predicting the Oscars and that's how they make money.
This is probably more just to show off what they can do.
Exactly.
And it's a fun way to say, like, hey, look, we are real good at crunching numbers.
Right, right. If we get a certain number of our guesses correct, then you know that our methodology is really reliable, and therefore you should hire us to do whatever else we do.
And I have a personal caveat about that, but I'll wait until the end.
All right. So the first one I wanted to talk about, the one that I first looked at when I was looking into this whole idea, is a company called Farsight, which started making predictions in 2013. And I was looking to see if they made any for this past year, but didn't find any information on that. So 2013 and 2014 they did. And I think I know why they might have stopped in 2014. So in 2013, they made six predictions, right, of the big categories in the Oscars, like Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor, Actress, that kind of thing. I think Supporting Actor and Supporting Actress were the last two. Mm-hmm. And they got all but one correct in 2013.
Yeah, they missed Best Director,
I think. Right, that's right. And then in 2014, they got all six correct, which is why I think they might have stopped. Because right. Why...
They were like, well, Yahtzee, let's just stop there.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Why risk... Why risk a bad year? And granted, this is me guessing. They may have had other very valid reasons. This is just a wild guess on my part. But at any rate, they did get 6 out of 6, which sounds pretty impressive.
You know, I do wonder, how would a company make a prediction like that, since these evaluations are supposed to be subjective? You know,
right.
It's hard to watch an actor's performance in one scene, then watch a different actor perform a different scene and put a number on which one is more likely to win.
Right. And if this were a pure experience where every single person in the Academy was completely unaffected by anything on the outside of it.
And furthermore, the voting process was more straightforward.
Right. If all of that were true, I think it'd be very difficult for any algorithm to truly predict what would happen. However, we live in a world where this voting process is a little more complicated, and it is very much wound up in the Hollywood politics. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Hollywood politics can include things like the buzz that a film gets, things like scandals can affect which movies or actors or directors may or may not win that year. Things that are outside of just the quality of the film or performance itself. So ultimately, that's another reason why Oscars feel a little silly, because you can never truly be sure that the award is going to
the best.
The best. It may be going to someone for reasons that are on top of the quality of their performance. And keep in mind, like we said, if a film is up for nomination, chances are it's reached a certain level of quality. So it's not like these are necessarily bad movies, but maybe it's not the best movie or best performance. I'd like to point to Return of the King. I'm a huge Lord of the Rings fan. Don't get me wrong. Love it. But I get a feeling like a lot of the awards that went to Return of the King that year were because the previous entries of the Lord of the Rings series were largely overlooked by the Oscars. And this was the last chance.
They figured it was due.
I think so. I think that really was part of it.
One year, Leonardo DiCaprio may win an Oscar for not his best role.
Right.
But people just kind of think, he's due.
Right. He why doesn't he have an Oscar already? Yeah, this performance he did, in the reboot of the Ernest Goes to Camp series, we got to give it to him for something.
I would watch that movie.
I would too. That's kind of great.
Call us.
I was literally just grasping at straws there, but I'm glad you like it. So anyway, Farsight, their algorithm actually took a lot of these other elements into consideration. These things like industry buzz, stuff that, again, that would seem really kind of weird to quantify. So they would identify trends and biases that were in the media about all of the different nominees. It took into account news events, and so it took all this stuff, and they quantified it in a way that they have not completely revealed, because of course they're not going to do that.
Oh, it's proprietary, yeah.
Yeah,
that's the whole point.
Yeah, they want people to say, oh, well, you have the secret sauce, right, that makes this work, so therefore you're not going to share the secret sauce, because then it's not secret anymore, and then anyone can do it. So at any rate, it worked really well. Now, some people would say, and by some people, I mean like some media journalists, people who cover this stuff for a living, would say that a lot of these approaches do very little little more than what pundits do on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. That essentially this is the same stuff that the people who analyze this, like human beings who just watch mm-hmm. and analyze this, they do the same thing.
Pick up on buzz, look at the lay of the land.
Yeah.
Oh, what sure, people sure. Are saying. Well, but the whole point is that, you know, you don't have to be an industry expert. You can just hire a company like this to be your industry expert.
Sure. And they're able to take in way more mm-hmm. data than a person could, right? They were factoring in things like the betting odds in Vegas over which nominee was most likely to win. So, you know, taking all of that and making it make sense in a streamlined fashion, that's a real challenge, even for someone who watches the industry closely, right? Mm-hmm. But for a machine that can crunch all that and weigh the different factors, look at previous Oscar ceremonies and who won, and kind of look at the different criteria and say, which of these seems to matter the most? Let's build our algorithm to give those the most weight for the predictions, and that's what's going to guide our choices. And it seemed to work. Now, they're not the only company that's in this, and I've got some other ones to mention for this past year when we finally got to see the Oscars in 2015 and kind of
didn't watch who won.
I was watching WWE Fastlane, actually, so I missed out the Oscars, too.
So Hulk Hogan won the Oscar.
Yeah.
Hulk Hogan was not at WWE Fastlane. Man, you're uninformed about professional wrestling and uninformed about the Oscars, Joe. Come on. What were you doing that Sunday?
I'm pretty sure Hulk Hogan was a wrestler.
At any rate, some of the other companies that got into this have acknowledged that it's tricky to make predictions about who's going to win the Oscars. For one thing, you're working with a much smaller data sample than you would with some of the other market analysis these firms would typically do.
Right. So we are generally talking about data analysis, and it's not even necessarily all that big
right.
of a data question. Sometimes it's kind of medium data.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're talking about trying to predict what 6,600 or so people are going to vote on, that's really not, when we talk about big data, that's not that huge.
Oh, no, not at all.
In the grand scheme of things. And hypothetically, the members of the Academy are largely anonymous. So it's, you can't poll the individual people.
No.
So one company, called Exponential, their approach was they wanted to get a group of web users together that they thought would reflect the Academy's overall philosophies and biases, that sort of thing. So they actually ended up, they had something like 32,000 people that they looked at to create kind of a sample Academy. And they even went so far as to say, oh, well, these people are really, in this sample, are really super liberal, and that doesn't reflect the Academy, because the Academy's not super liberal. It's a little liberal, but not as liberal as these guys, so we can't use these guys as our predictor group. Like, and they would even say things like, people who really liked such and such politician would be most likely to vote for such and such movie, but because that doesn't reflect the Academy, we're going to ignore that. Just like, wow, okay. So they were finding weird correlations based upon philosophies and movie preferences. At any rate, once they managed to get their representative group that they felt reflected the Academy, they discovered that it was either going to be Birdman or The Imitation Game that would take home the Best Picture Oscar, and Birdman did. Although pundits were also saying that Birdman was going to, so take that with a grain of salt. Another company called PredictWise analyzes information from production markets and award histories. It also predicted Birdman would win. But not all of them were so flawless. There's a company called MovieGraph, and their approach was very different. They looked at the tonal elements of the actual films. They looked at recent Oscar winners and the movies that won the Oscars and said, what are the elements that have won Oscars in the past few years? Because that's indicating trends that people find to be really noteworthy and award-worthy. And based upon that, they said, oh, well, according to that analysis, American Sniper is going to win.
Oof.
Totally did not win.
No.
So not every method works equally.
You know, I haven't seen American Sniper, so I can't actually judge it. But by the title, it does sound like one of those direct-to-DVD Tom Berenger movies.
no comment. So again, the LA Times, which obviously, you know, it's right there in the heart of the film industry, pointed out that many of these predictions were made by media journalists who had been just watching the the awards ceremonies unfold over time and kind of just the trends that were going on in Hollywood, and have suggested that perhaps while some of these stories the earlier ones might seem really impressive to get 6 out of 6 predictions correct, it's not necessarily the hard science that some of these companies might be presenting.
Okay. Can I have a Lauren rant time now?
You can
actually
absolutely have a Lauren rant about
this. Can we have the intro music and everything? All right. Lauren rant time. All right. So I do think that it's really cool that we are making computers that are as smart as humans at making these predictions. I do genuinely think that that is an impressive feat. However, a word about the Academy. Mm-hmm. All right. So though, yes, the Academy does keep its membership list private, several researchers have sussed out a majority of its membership and found that it's over 90% white, over 70% male, and has a median age of over 60 years. With that kind of skew, I'd posit that it's perhaps not the hardest thing to determine the winners that these people are choosing.
Right. Yeah. Diversity is not one of the Academy's many facets, I'd say. there are a lot of people have pointed out over, you know, recently, and actually, you know, throughout the entire history of the Academy, people have pointed out the flaws in the Academy. Hasn't stopped the Oscars from being portrayed as this incredibly glamorous and prestigious award ceremony, but I keep hoping that with the increased amount of attention and focus that we will start to see a better representation of a broader spectrum of people, so that films that are legitimately awesome but rarely get that kind of consideration are grouped in with the ones that, you know, you would, as soon as you see the trailer, you think,
whatever
Tom
Hanks vehicle is coming out this year,
yeah,
that's
exactly
a tearjerker and involves a volleyball and
right,
whatever.
Yeah. Someone overcoming adversity and injury and that kind of thing. Tragedy, personal tragedy, got to have that in there.
Sure.
I think it's generally a crime, the lack of films represented at the Academy that have the word chainsaw in the title.
I think they're really missing on the important Leatherface demographic there. There are a lot of people who are wearing human skin out there.
So, Joe,
and they're really not being represented.
Joe,
speaking of wearing human skin.
No. We're not segueing yet, Joe. Joe, you are obsessed with this. All right, so here's a little peek behind the curtain, folks. Joe and I are working on an upcoming episode of Tech Stuff, and Joe has been pitching really, really hard that we should do a full Tech Stuff episode on chainsaws. So the fact that it also has spilled over into forward thinking tells me that he's truly passionate about this, and I need to reconsider my original heck no response.
Come on, chainsaw technology. I'm curious.
It's right. More interesting than you'd think. I don't think about chainsaws night and day, just all of today.
All right, that's fair.
Okay, so we've talked about how you can perhaps use quantitative analysis aided by computers to predict how humans would evaluate art.
Sure.
And entertainment. But what about going at the art and entertainment from the other direction? What if we used computer-aided quantitative analysis and maybe even some aspects resembling big data to determine how we make the movies
Ooh.
In the first place?
So, like talking about a computer writer, like someone, a computer writing a screenplay.
Well, you know, obviously we can't do anything like that yet, but
we've had whole episodes about that, yes.
It's kind of unpleasant to realize how close we are to that in some ways.
Right.
Now, I want to give a little analogy here.
Sure.
If you work in creating content, you've heard of content, yeah, creating content for the web,
yeah,
you will know that there are certain things you can look at in your data analytics. You might look at Google Analytics for your website,
yeah,
and come up with tips for how you create new content. So, for example, you might look at the 1,000 articles you have so far and say, huh, whenever we do a list article, ones that start with an even number get this percentage fewer clicks than ones that start with an odd number. So maybe when we create new content that is list-based, we should always start it with an odd number.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe we use this word in the title, and when we use this word, it gets this percentage fewer clicks than when we use a synonym for the word that's this other word. You can get into really minute analysis.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And if that sounds a little bit too cold and calculating, I mean, we do at a certain point here at HowStuffWorks use that kind of information to guide what kind of information we put out. Like, for example, on one of our video shows, Brain Stuff, we look at the videos that people watch the most often, and we say ones about animals are getting less attention than ones about the human body. So let's do more about the human body because that's what people seem to like.
But the kind of concerns that go into how you, say, title content for the web to have better traffic performance, that's a fairly small concern.
Sure.
You're not, like, writing the article based on this. It's just, you know, you're doing something about how you phrase the title or the pagination structure or something like that.
It's really presentation.
Yeah. You can apply the same thing to movies, and it's really up to you how far you want to go with this, you know, scrambling of elements.
Yeah, it's so. First of all, it is not unusual in the screenwriting world to have a writer turn in a screenplay. It's been attached to a production, a director's been attached, and then for either the movie studio, the director, or a producer, someone involved in the production to decide, you know, the screenplay needs to be punched up a bit. It can't. It's not quite where we need it to be in order to make the movie we want to make.
You ever get to the credits in a movie that really wasn't all that great, and then you see written by, and there are like six names?
Yup.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's probably another six or seven that got left off for some reason.
Right. Yeah. This is where you get people doctoring a screenplay in
right.
order to try and make it more appealing or more marketable, whatever
or
it
just,
might be.
Or just better, just more punchy
sure.
sometimes.
Sometimes it means removing an entire character from a story. You might look at it and say, well, this character is superfluous. Let's remove them, give some of the lines to some of these other characters, mm-hmm. cut the rest, and move forward.
Or adding another character,
yep.
like in Silent Hill, when they realized that there were literally no men in the movie, other than Pyramid Head.
And
then Sean Bean happened.
Oh, Sean
Bean. I'm going to take a wild
so
guess
lonely.
And say he dies in the movie.
He actually doesn't.
Wow.
Spoiler alert. It's
How?
Like the one movie series
How did that
he
happen?
Lives through. It's crazy.
No, he's just left in this bleak gray solitude forever.
All right, well, that's
much
fair.
Better than dying.
Yeah.
Well, at any rate, so normally we assign humans the task of doctoring screenplays. However, there have been a couple of companies that have come out and suggested that they have some algorithms that can help analyze a screenplay, see what elements would really supposedly, at any rate, do really well with audiences, which ones might fall flat, and therefore you could follow the very cold algorithm and doctor your screenplay so that it has the best potential to be a big hit.
Right. So we're talking about taking a process that used to be done more on the, say, the perhaps well-informed intuitions of somebody in charge. Mm-hmm. They'd look at a script and say, this isn't right, we need to make some changes. Now we can actually base this on data.
Yeah.
And you can say, well, we've analyzed 7,000 movies over the past however, and movies that had this element didn't do as well as movies that substituted it for this other element. Therefore, we can recommend the following script changes.
Yeah. Worldwide Motion Pictures Group introduced an algorithm that the company said it could evaluate a script based upon past films' successes and failures. We're largely talking about box office success here, so not necessarily awards consideration, but
or like, you know, Rotten Tomatoes score, but yeah.
Right, right. You know, they're literally looking at how many tickets were sold. That's the mark of success as far as they're concerned. Not artistic success, nothing like that. It's specifically how many butts did you put in seats?
We're not running a charity here.
Shakespeare got to get paid, son.
Okay, so it could actually analyze script elements and give a historically derived audience reaction to those elements. So let's say that you're writing your screenplay and you want to incorporate a sweet old lady who dispenses pithy advice. And then you would check the algorithm to see how such characters had resonated with past audiences in various other movies.
If this sounds horribly mechanical and uninspiring, you're pretty much right. I want to give a few examples.
Yeah.
There was a New York Times piece from 2013 covering what this Worldwide Motion Pictures Group did. And they explained their services by saying, okay, here's an example. In movies with demons, you remember a while back, demon movies were really big.
Oh,
Paranormal
yeah.
Activity,
mm-hmm.
all
totally.
That. And they said that, quote, targeting demons, unquote, do better than, quote, summoned demons. So if you have a scene where you've got characters who are using a Ouija board or they draw a big pentagram on the ground and bring demons up out of hell, those are not as good as demons that show up from out of nowhere and harass you of their own agency.
Right. So they have chosen to torment you for reasons that the demon is aware of, but the character may or may not be.
Right.
But they certainly weren't summoned.
So if you write a horror screenplay where the characters get out the Ouija board to get in contact with the demon and that's how it all starts, these guys will tell you, no, 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 no. You're going to lose money on this. You've got to get rid of the Ouija board and just have the demon show up.
Yeah. You might start to think, hey, this suggests that it doesn't matter how good the writing is. It just matters which elements you put into the movie. And therein lies one of the problems.
I want to cover a few more examples they give. Also mentioned in the New York Times piece was that, quote, guardian heroes do better than, quote, cursed heroes.
That Star Wars movie did so poorly. I'm so glad that they've pointed this out. Sorry.
I guess it all depends on how they are defining guardian versus cursed.
Okay. All right. That's fair.
This same company was also covered in a piece I'm going to talk about in a second that was a marketplace piece on this type of business. And they said that, for example, in slasher films where there are killings, the killings should be random rather than motivated by, quote, something rational like revenge or money. One last one.
All right.
The Worldwide Motion Pictures Group people, they said that in a film that's based on a true story, you've got to stick to the facts. They said that films that deviate from the facts pretty far in a quote based on a true story don't do as well because they give this explanation. The audience will Google the story when they leave the theater.
More than half the audience, they said. Yeah.
I don't know where they get that information.
Which is weird because you would think, like, when they're leaving the theater, they've already bought the ticket to see the movie.
So it doesn't matter one way. Well, but they could tell their friends.
Yeah,
like,
so then
hey,
word of mouth, I guess.
Was,
yeah.
So this company likes to emphasize, or let's say liked, because we have some news about how they end up.
Yeah.
They liked to emphasize that the decisions and the suggestions made for changing these screenplays are not made by machines. They don't, like, run the document of the screenplay through a computer program and the computer tells you what to do. Instead, it's humans aided by data.
Right.
So it's humans who are using data, and that is, you know, like, obviously computer-aided, machine-generated data.
Sure. But it's
the
humans. The
humans
are
making the recommendations.
Right. So I think of it kind of like, imagine the earliest days of Pandora, where you would, they'd get a piece of music and they would start to analyze it and add all these meta tags to that music to identify the various components of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would start to map those to other pieces of music that shared at least a certain number of those same qualities. And therefore, when you would build a Pandora radio station based off a particular song, you would get other songs that had elements at least of that first song in common. And I think of it similarly to that. Like, they're looking at all this accumulated information that they have stored in some form of database. But it's a person who's actually going through and reading the screenplay
and
to identify them.
It.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the company, this particular company isn't around anymore. It imploded in 2014. The company was in debt, and controversially, a whole bunch of folks were either fired or left the company, and some of the big players immediately formed another company called C4 and then bought up all the previous company's intellectual property assets.
Hmm.
So would you say it was a heroic implosion or a guardian implosion?
A cursed guardian.
I think it was a random slasher implosion, maybe.
Snark.
But at any rate, so the idea behind this was just to check and see if there are elements within a script that could be tweaked. So it wasn't meant to be like a here are the 20 different things the perfect movie script should have in it. Because if you did that, you would probably end up with a movie very similar to that music we talked about with the songs that were generated by all the elements people identified as either being wonderful or awful. Remember those?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We all agreed that the worst song was way more interesting than the best one.
I still sing that song to myself sometimes.
Do all your shopping at Walmart.
Uh-huh. Right.
Yeah, so. But yeah, you wanted to talk about this other company too, right, Joe?
Well, just that there was another company who did a similar service. They were called Epagogics, and they styled themselves with a capitalized X at the end, I believe. But they do a similar kind of thing. They have analysts that read a script, and they've got a computer-enhanced algorithm that sort of compares the script elements against data that they've collected about what elements perform well, and they make recommendations. It's a similar idea. They can actually go through a script and give it a score that is aided by this data, and then they feed that score through their computer algorithm, and it makes a prediction about how much money this script would make at the box office given some kind of error bar. Obviously, they would claim that they offer a very valuable service. It's hard to know the level of quality in the services these kinds of companies provide, especially because I'm sure lots of customers who use their services are not super forthcoming about that fact.
Yeah. And also, I mean, without being able to see what the product was before versus mm-hmm. after, it's impossible for us to make any determination at all, right?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Now, on one hand, I can see how, especially as time goes on, services like this could get more and more accurate and effective. Like, I don't doubt that you can probably get some pretty good predictions online just by analyzing script elements about what kinds of things will make money. But personally, I hate this idea.
I'm not a big fan either.
Oh, well, there's nothing saying that plugging in a little puzzle piece like this, making a change, like, for example, this Epagogics company did a piece with NPR's Marketplace mm-hmm. a while back and told a story about one movie that they went in to help doctor, and they recommended cutting down the roles of one of the supporting characters, and the head, you know, the person that they were talking to laughed and said, like, oh, that's great, you just saved me like $12 million, because I realized that this big actress that I was going to get for this big supporting role, I don't need her anymore.
Right.
I can hire someone cheaper.
Right, because now this, if this role's not going to be that prominent, then why would I spend the money on
right.
someone a huge name for that?
But you know, there's nothing saying that role that would have gone to Angelina Jolie
right.
Wouldn't be better served by having a different actress there.
That's true.
Sure. And just to remind again, this is not a process that's new. Script doctoring has been around. We're just talking about applying newly quantitative methods to it.
Right.
Instead of going on the intuitions of somebody in charge, we're going on data that we have that we can compare a script to.
Right. This is, you know, before you might think of script doctoring as something in the screenplay is just not working. Something is, it's clunky, or the story seems to get bogged down in the second act, something along those lines. Whereas in this approach, you're thinking, you should change this old lady character into a young man character, because young male characters in this particular role end up selling X number more tickets than if you were to use an old lady character in this particular type of role within your story. And
especially
that's when it starts,
if they're played by an actor named Corey.
But that's when it starts to, that's when it really starts to feel like this is getting a little too weird and cold and calculated and less like art, right?
Right.
I don't know, like to devil's advocate, and I love making that noun a verb. you know, I would still argue that it's up to the artists, even if they are working off of cold data, it's up to the artists to do what they will with that data and go like, oh no, you're right. Like this young man character could be an amazing character, and maybe that voice would be a really interesting voice. And maybe the reason I don't know. I mean, you know, it's what you make of it is all I'm saying.
I can see that, but I can also see as a writer, someone writing something and you create a vision and you write it down and then having a producer come in and say, yeah, this character that you created, this strong young female character, needs to be a strong male character because young
they sell more tickets.
Yeah. And that would really upset me.
Oh, of course.
So, I mean, these are the sort of things. And also, like, the other objections here, again, this is looking at specific story elements, not necessarily the execution of those elements, but just whether they're there or not.
Right.
Right?
So, I mean, obviously, you can't tell by looking at a script what kind of star power or just presence the actors are going to bring.
Or just how well written the part is.
Right, yeah. You can't even tell about the quality or the style of the dialogue.
Yeah, if all you're doing is doing the metadata approach saying, it's the demographic information of whatever element it is, or, you know, this movie is set in Seattle and film's set in Seattle, blah, blah, blah. You should really set this movie, over in Portland instead or something along those lines. And you'd be like, well, it seems so arbitrary, but also it's all based upon past data. And that suggests that you can't do anything original because it has to be weighed against things that have already happened. And it could be that there's a lot of really crappy movies that have been made, but you've created a really cool idea that could be a huge hit. But because all the other movies in that space have been crappy, you don't even get the chance. So the example I gave, it's a bad example, but let's say that you write a dinosaur movie. And, let's imagine that Jurassic Park never happened, but Tammy and the T-Rex and Theodore Rex both happened, and they are terrible movies. So then you write a movie where there are humans and dinosaurs in it together, and because you've got these other pieces that are poisoning the well, the data comes back and says there's no way, and audiences don't respond well to this kind of movie.
And then we never would have gotten Carnosaur.
Yeah. And that would have been a shame because that dinosaur was adorably vicious. But yeah, the real point here is that it discourages people from trying to go in innovative directions because there's not data supporting whether or not that would succeed. And then producers are saying, well, I'm not going to put money into something where I don't expect to get a payback on my investment.
Right. Well, this is a thing that's common in all kinds of businesses where people want a safe bet.
Yeah.
In a lot of cases, the person at the top of a business, they're looking at a film as an investment. They have to spend money to make the film, and they'd rather be sure they're going to get a pretty decent return on a film than take a risk.
Oh,
that
yeah.
Might pay off big, or it might be a total flop.
And movies are expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
sure.
So they're looking at it as an investment, and they're saying, well, if I make something that nobody's ever seen before and I can't compare it to things that have been successful in the past, I'm taking more of a risk. I'm putting more of my money on the line and I can't be sure about what I'm going to get back. And that's, I can understand that from a business perspective. I can sympathize with that in terms of making an investment, but it is kind of sad that results in fewer movies that take those risks that turn out to be the movies we love. I mean, almost all of the movies we really love are the kinds of movies that do something new. They take a risk. They do something you've never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how well movies like that would do when compared against the data of past hits and blockbusters.
Now, fortunately, I think that while we will continue to see companies like this provide a service to movie studios, I also don't think that it's ultimately going to be the thing that defines the industry as a whole.
Oh, sure.
So, we're painting a lot of doom and gloom, but really, honestly, we're not thinking that this is going to happen all the time, always.
Sure, sure. Right? And also, I think there's a huge space to come to some kind of happy medium with looking at this kind of data and also allowing new ideas to blossom, like the way that Netflix models its original series.
This is really cool. So Netflix, they pay people to watch Netflix.
Sure.
And then those people, what they're doing is they're essentially creating the tags very much like the Pandora example I gave earlier.
Critically acclaimed movie starring strong female characters that like coffee.
Right. Yeah. If you've ever really dug through Netflix where it has the various categories, sometimes those categories get really hysterical.
I like them.
Sometimes just the category is all the entertainment you need. You don't even need to watch a movie. You just look at what the category name is. But this comes out of the fact that there are people who are tagging these movies and they say, oh, you know, this is related to these other films in these different ways. So you get, you can do an analysis. You can compare two films or two TV series with Netflix, whatever, against one another and see how well they match up as far as those meta tags go. And this is kind of how Netflix creates that recommendation engine so that if you watch, let's say, for instance, I just watched an independent foreign horror film last night. And so based upon that, I will probably get other recommendations of other independent foreign horror films, that's exactly what I want. So that's fantastic. But they're also using it to guide their decisions, like you said, Lauren, with their original series. Netflix produces its own films and TV shows. Mm-hmm. And by looking to see what people are watching, they get an idea of which elements people are most interested in, and then they can say, all right, let's develop a show that caters to this audience.
Yeah, let's green light a show. And the terrific thing about Netflix's green lighting process is that they don't let someone do a pilot and then have that pilot sink or swim. They have someone create an entire first season.
Yeah, they release it all at once.
Yeah, which is so giving to the creators.
Sure.
I
totally agree.
Awesome. I'm just wondering that how come no matter what I watch on Netflix, it tells me that the thing I should watch next is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3 Turtles in Time?
Because it knows you?
Yeah.
Because that is what you should watch next, Joe?
Surprised it's not just all the films that have the word chainsaw in them.
No, actually, I think what it thinks I like is violent, mind-bending thrillers with a strong female lead.
That's actually a category that I get. Yeah.
Yeah. I occasionally get that as well. So another way we're seeing big data affect the film industry is through marketing. When a film gets released in one part of the world, they might see what types of approaches are working or not working, and therefore they can actually tweak how they market a film in other regions to try and maximize that marketing effect. Keep in mind, a film's budget is almost nearly matched by the marketing budget to kind of push that film out there. So if you hear that a film cost like $200 million to make, it probably was another $100, $150 million to market. It's crazy how much money is going into this. And they, of course, want it to be as effective as possible. For instance, I've seen previews for a film that made it look like it was kind of a comedy, and later on seen previews for the same film that make it look like it's a nail-biting thriller.
Oh, sure.
And I'm thinking, like, what? Which movie am I going to actually see when you go to the theater?
And then a third trailer will play up the romance. And
there was one recently. I wish I could remember what film it was, but I remember when I saw the preview, I thought, this seems like a totally different movie than the previews I saw like 4 months ago, but I can't remember off the top of my head what it was. So good story, Jonathan. It's also telling us more about how people consume content. So Netflix releasing all those episodes, like releasing a full season on one day, as opposed to having each episode come out week by week, it's there. You know, that's because Netflix has seen people will sit down and binge watch a show. That's how they like to consume stuff. They don't want to necessarily have to wait a full week for the next segment of that story. Mm-hmm. And so that's why Netflix, when they greenlit their series, they say, all right, we're going to fund a whole thing and then we're releasing it all at once, and people can choose to watch it all at that same time, or they can parse it out however much they want.
Or they can leave their houses sometimes.
Yeah.
Sorry, I say that, having completely done the like 7 or 8 episode benders.
Yeah. When the Arrested Development season came out, I pretty much consumed it in 2 days.
I have an Orange is the New Black problem.
Yeah. That's understandable. So the question now is, where's this going in the future? I mean, we have said that we're probably going to continue to see this sort of doctoring approach to at least get an idea of, you know, is this script actually marketable or is it not marketable? But beyond that, are we going to start seeing things like a computer actually write a story, taking all these elements, and are we going to get like the most disjointed, weird story with all the fantastic elements crammed into it.
Man, I kind of hope so. I would go. That sounds like a goofy, wonderful thing that I would see once.
Sounds like you're describing Turtles in Time.
You can just see like superheroes, robotic figures riding dinosaurs, which may or may not also be super robotic.
You know, I'm wondering how long it's going to take us to get to that thing we were worried about at the beginning, where we've actually pretty much got computers writing the scripts for us.
Yeah.
And other computers playing the characters for us.
And other computers watching it. People have just completely been taken out of the equation. We're simply thrown on top of the furnace to fuel all the computers.
Wow.
Went
to that dark place. I mean, that's pretty likely. But, you know, before we get to that point, when humans are still watching the movies and still acting in the movies.
Yeah.
Are we going to get to a point where, you know, it's easier if we just cut out the middleman, because we're getting to the point where there's too much data for these human analysts to mess with. We just need to have a program that can generate a script that they know has all the right, you know, money-making
beats,
elements.
Yeah.
It doesn't have any of these low-scoring elements like the old lady who dispenses pithy advice. Psh, you know,
can that lady.
Right. Oh, don't even bother. Why waste your time with a draft that has that when you can just have the program create a storyline for you?
I could certainly see this being done as an experiment. Like,
the way that algorithm-based poetry is sometimes beautiful.
Yeah. It's sometimes beautiful in a kind of just sort of odd alien way. But I imagine a film would probably, at least the first few incarnations of this sort of thing, would be similar. Like one of those things where you're like, this feels like someone who almost understands how humans think but doesn't quite go the whole way would make a movie.
I don't know. I would want a double feature of like that. Like, you know, starring some like good people who have good senses of humor about it and, you know, could really play it up. And I would totally see a double feature of like that and like whatever Michael Bay is doing this week. Just to
which
compare
one is
the
more
two.
Human?
Okay. Yeah.
I've got so many comments, but they all pretty much say that I'm guessing the Bay movie would be the one I'd hate. But
I'd certainly see this as an experiment. I'm talking about
if the whole industry.
Norm.
I don't see it becoming the norm, partially because if you are taking this approach where you're trying to make all of your decisions based upon past outcomes.
Popularity, yeah.
Then ultimately all your stories are going to end up being incredibly formulaic and similar to one another. And
it turns out you don't need computers for that.
No, not at all.
Our friend Michael Bay has really mastered this particular one.
Yeah, I'm like, the terrible dystopia you guys are talking about is the one we are living in right now.
Well, there was an episode, you know, and I know Joe has seen some of the Red Letter Media videos. They do a lot of film criticism, and they do it in a very snarky way, but they make legitimate, you know, film criticism fun.
Yeah, they have some smart things to say. The warning, if you go check them out, they're not exactly family friendly.
That is true.
It is adult content, but
yeah,
but give it a listen.
They are very insightful and very funny and very inappropriate at times. But one of the things they did, and it was kind of as a gag as the fourth Transformer film was coming out, was they put all of the first three Transformer films on concurrently and sat down on a couch to watch three televisions as they all played out. And they saw that these three movies had the same beats. Like within 30 seconds of each other, they were identical as far as big action sequence, stupid character moment, terrible comedy relief all the way through.
Yeah, and like not the same way that people say that Pink Floyd matches up with Wizard of Oz. Yeah, but like actually.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
It's like, more like the way that if you play Nickelback songs at the same time, they have all the same changes.
Yeah, very similar to that. And it was actually pretty interesting. And you hear them like they start laughing because they see like, look, now these two are in the same moment. Because it wasn't always all three. I think at one point one of the films got like they lagged behind because they ended up either pausing it or something accidentally.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
But at any rate, they talked about how frequently they matched up, and it just showed that there was a very formulaic approach. So this is something that's happening already. I just suggest that if we were to move to an area where computers were making these decisions and they were basing it purely on past experience, we would see way more formulaic films. They would, that would be the majority if that was like how they were being generated. And because we haven't reached a point where we can create a computer that not only can draw from past experience, but innovate from that, create something brand new that is paradigm shifting.
I think we're a lot closer to a computer that can write a basic story than a computer that could actually generate a script with dialogue and stuff. I think that those kind of like human textual elements would still have to be filled in by a person. Human writer.
So this would be like the actual beats. Like this is what happens in this scene. This is what happens in the scene. Yeah. And then
I can
human would dialogue.
Very easily a computer telling you, maybe even today, if somebody spent time working on creating this program, that you need to have these types of characters, you need to have these types of events in the movie, and they need to come in this order.
Mm-hmm. And then Vin Diesel needs to race by in a car super high speed.
Ciao.
Yeah.
There's a film that I wanted to bring up that came out in 2013 called The Congress. I don't believe it's seen wide release yet, but I managed to catch it at the Atlanta Film Festival. It was starring Robin Wright, and it was directed and written for the screen by Ari Folman, based on a novel by Stanislaw Lem, which I would like to nominate as the best name. Stanislaw. Anyway, the Congress is about this near future wherein movie studios just upload actors, basically, and then create films by computer algorithm. And it's a really, really beautiful piece that explores these kind of tropes of what happens to the human element when you've taken the human element out of art.
Interesting.
I highly recommend getting a hold of it if you can, because it's just so beautiful and creative and impossible to imagine having come from a computer.
Right.
So if you're interested in this and interested in seeing a creative portrayal of it, then
yeah, I could definitely see. I mean, you guys remember when the commercials were coming out where they were digitally inserting, you know, dancing
whoever
characters.
They wanted.
Yeah. It's usually for vacuums. I remember those in particular.
Right.
Like Fred Astaire or Gene Kelly or something like that. And that raised a bunch, like people were starting to say, oh, are we moments away from being able to cast like the dream film where you can get young Marlon Brando in a film, you know, with actors and actresses that would not have been alive or not have been
willing to participate.
Right. Or at the peak of their performing potential or any of that at the same time. You could put them all together. Of course, we're still far away from that, too. It will be interesting to see how this develops. I'm sure we will see a lot of experiments come out about this. I mean, this seems like the sort of thing that artificial intelligence labs would do as a means of kind of just an experiment. See what happens if you can do this. I don't expect it to be necessarily, at least at the beginning, any more successful than that, you know, the greatest song ever written and the worst song ever written projects were, which were, again, interesting, but not something that you would necessarily want on your MP3 player. Although I do have the worst song on mine.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's good. I totally encourage someone to go make this. If any of you guys listening are filmmakers, please if you need a bad actor, I'll come act in your bad in this experiment. That sounds beautiful.
Yeah, I only agree to do it if I can be the best boy. I don't want to be the second best boy. Don't want to be the worst boy. I've got to be the best boy.
Jonathan, you're my key grip.
I'm like, oh, you're so close. You're so close. Before we make tons of other jokes about gaffers and other people who are absolutely key to getting a video or film or television shoot done.
Yes.
Let's wrap this up.
Some of them are so key, it's in their name.
It is. Let's wrap this up. So, you know, this was a fun topic to talk about. And, you know, we've been doing a lot of episodes that have been inspired by listeners who have written in. And we're looking for more of that because we love hearing from you guys. We've received so many cool suggestions. We can't wait to tackle them all. But don't let that stop you. Send in more. And you can do that by sending us an email. The address is fwthinking@howstuffworks.com, or drop us a line on Facebook, Twitter, or Google Plus. At Twitter and Google Plus, we are fwthinking. Just search fwthinking in Facebook. We'll pop right up and leave us a message, and we will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
That Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, they just disagree on how.
We're going to get across that wasteland, and we're going to do it together.
All episodes available now on Prime Video.
If you haven't heard, it's a good idea to fit probiotics into your daily routine. Fortunately, Nature's Way Women's Probiotic Pearls make that so easy. These adorable little pearls couldn't be easier to take, and they support both digestive and vaginal health, all because of the probiotics. There are actually 1 billion active cultures protecting against occasional bloating, constipation, and digestive discomfort, all in one tiny little pearl. To learn more about Nature's Way Women's Probiotic Pearls and how they can fit into your routine, visit naturesway.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.